Welcome to the Crispin Commentary Daily Mortgage News Podcast. I'm your host, Robbie Crispin. Topics on today's episode include Higher for Longer, my interview with PHH Mortgage's Chris Sabi on Subservicing 2.0 Beyond the Status Quo, and a look at reaction to the latest inflation report. Thanks to today's podcast sponsor, PHH Mortgage. For over 35 years, PHH Mortgage has provided industry-leading mortgage services. They're one of the largest servicers of residential mortgages in the United States and offer a variety of solutions for the entire mortgage lifecycle. If you are looking for a correspondent lending partner or an experienced award-winning subservicer who can manage your forward and reverse, residential and commercial, and performing and non-performing loans, look no further than PHH. Learn more at business.phhmortgage.com. The door is slammed shut on a June Fed rate cut as it seems inflation is sticking around. The consumer price index in March came in at 0.4% month over month, topping forecasts for a third straight month thanks to shelter, rising rent, and energy, transportation costs, weighing on the reading. From a year earlier, CPI picked up to a 3.5% increase from 3.2% in February, rising by the most since September. Excluding food and energy, the index increased 0.4% from February and showed no year-over-year decline in base from the prior month. Experts have been waiting for a deceleration based on leading indicators, but progress has more or less stalled over the past 9 months. Paired with recent reports showing a continued robust labor market and strong economic activity, investors no longer see much chance that the Fed will start easing anytime soon. Investors had expected the Fed to cut interest rates sharply, up to 6 times at the start of the year, but months of stubborn inflation and strong economic growth make cuts only in September and December now the most likely scenario. Treasury yields hit new 2024 highs yesterday, as investors pared back expectations for rate reductions, with the policy-sensitive 2-year U.S. Treasury soaring by as much as 24 basis points. For today's interview, I wanted to welcome to the show PHH Mortgage's Chris Sabi to talk about Subservicing 2.0, Beyond the Status Quo. He's Senior Vice President of Enterprise Sales, joining PHH in 2017, and manages all growth for PHH's residential, commercial, and reverse subservicing units. Chris helped PHH grow its servicing book to more than 1.4 million loans, or $300 billion of unpaid principal balance, and PHH is now recognized as the most highly decorated servicer in the U.S. over the past 3 years, under the Fannie Mae Star and Freddie Mac Sharp programs for servicing expertise. As a subservicing executive for the past 19 years, Chris has onboarded hundreds of subservicing, co-issue, and recapture clients, representing more than $120 billion of servicing transactions. He's built 2 subservicers from the ground up, managed projects in 8 different countries, and held leadership positions at CoreLogic, LenderLive, Walter Investments, and Arthur Andersen. I've had you on the podcast before, but I'm excited to have you back. Today, we're going to focus on Subservicing 2.0, Beyond the Status Quo. And I like that little rhyme there. Hopefully, it's as smooth as it sounds.
That's right.
But I want to start by asking you, the originations market is starting to stabilize. We're coming into this traditionally stronger spring home buying season. Interest rates, there's the hope that they're coming down. They've kind of been sticky for a little bit. What kind of shifts are you seeing out there? And how's this impacting your world in servicing and subservicing?
Yeah. Hey, Robbie. Yeah. First off, great speaking with you again. Congratulations on the continued success of the podcast. We really, as an industry, appreciate what you do. In terms of the market shifts, I got to say, Robbie, after 20 years in this crazy subservicing business, I can tell you one thing with absolute certainty. We are in unprecedented times right now. Like as we speak, there is a significant amount of disruption going on right now that is making most of my clients and other mortgage bankers' heads spin. Just to summarize, here's what the last 24 months have looked like just in subservicing in this sector. So the top 2 players in our space have laid off hundreds of people and continue to be under regulatory watch. 6 out of the next 8 top subservicers have either been acquired, they have merged, or they're currently up for sale, 6 out of 8. And then you have 2 to 3 brand new entrants who have virtually no experience, you know, for any length of time as a true subservicer, yet they're winning business in very creative ways. So in terms of just the potential subservicing partners out there, it is chaos, right? Think about it. There are very few industries that I can think of where 8 out of the top 10 providers are undergoing this massive change in such a short period of time. So that's not gloom and doom. That's just what's happening. But meanwhile, the demand for subservicing after 20 years and the demand for these quality partners, it's growing and growing. One stat that I love to throw out there to give you an idea of the growth pattern. So 7 years ago in 2017, 1 out of every 6 loans in America was subserviced. Today, it's 1 of every 3. And that's because MSR holders, they're getting more comfortable with the subservicing model. They're mitigating their risk by outsourcing to experts. And frankly, we're just getting better as an industry. But why is it happening? My take is that it's partly due to the origination market, like you mentioned, and these rates that are spiking from 3% to 8% in record time. But second, more directly, originators and MSR holders, they're simply looking for alternatives to underperforming or costly in-house shops or subservicers. They want creative ways to cut costs, but still improve their customer service. They're looking for ways to generate new revenue, but not add headcount. They're looking for new technology, but not invest in it. So it sounds like, Robbie, they're asking for their cake and eat it too. They are. But the good news is that our industry's really reacted well. And we as an industry have been able to offer some pretty compelling solutions in this new era I'm calling subservicing 2.0, which I'm sure we'll get into more details later.
That is a pretty compelling stat, 1 in 6 loans down to 1 in 3 loans. And I remember you mentioning last time that the subservicing market is over $4 trillion in unpaid principal balance and growing. I'll ask you today, what are some characteristics of originators or MSR holders that you consider to be the best candidates for subservicing? What specifically are they looking for and how hard is it for them to shift?
Yeah, very simply put, Robbie, it's a little touchy-feely, but if you want to switch either to subservicer or from an underperforming subservicer to somebody else, the right way you have to think about it is you've got to be all in. Okay, so what does that mean, be all in? Well, it starts by that mortgage banker, that client, you got to be brutally honest with yourself and your current servicing setup. You got to be honest with your subservicer, your servicing oversight team, your in-house team. You know, how are they doing, right? I tell all clients, take the time, evaluate the health, evaluate the effectiveness of your current strategy, and just ask some simple questions, right? These are very easy questions to ask whomever you're working with, your own staff or a subservicer. Is your team underqualified? Are they non-compliant in any way? Are they wearing too many hats? I hear that one a lot. My folks are wearing too many hats. Is your subservicer really responsive to your needs? That's a big trait. Are they being responsive enough? Are they your strategic partner to help you grow your business? Or are they just a vendor who collects payments, issues statements, right? Are they a real partner? Does your subservicer take accountability, right? When something goes wrong, do they do a root cause analysis? Do they fix it once and it never happens again? Or do you see the same issues coming up over and over again? This is an important one. I think the most important one. Would you recommend your subservicer to one of your closest friends or closest industry colleagues? Could you stand behind? Could you vouch for them, right? Is your servicing team representing your customers and your brand the way you do during origination? And then lastly, is your subservicer, are they innovative? Do they go above and beyond, right? Subservicing 1.0, a lot of commodity, a lot of traditionalism, right? What are we doing different? So if you're not getting the answers that you want on those kind of basic questions, you know, you really have to be all in and quickly come to that decision. Hey, we got to make a change, right? The best clients PHH has brought on in the past are those who are very clear with their strengths and weaknesses. They know their pain points. They know what's important to their team. They know what their customers want. And again, it's a little soapboxy. I get it. But they've got to be bold. They've got to be brave enough to say, hey, this isn't working. we have to leave a bad relationship, and it could be with their subservicer or even their own team, right? But I can't tell you the number of times, Robbie, I've heard, the number one mistake: we're too busy to make a switch. We can't afford to make a switch right now. But they're typically in a lot of pain. They're losing a lot of money. I simply say the opposite. You can't afford to stay in your current environment. You're paying way too much. So once they realize that they can switch in 90 to 120 days, they can save literally hundreds of thousands, even millions a year. And the subservicer will do 90% of the work to make that transition. Most clients will see that light and move forward.
I can't say that I'm talking about subservicing with my closest friends, but yes, certainly with industry calls. that is a good barometer of if it's a company you would trust. Servicing in general is typically viewed as a cost center. And given how lean the market's running right now, are there any tips you give MSR holders on how they can drive profits with their subservicers as opposed to it just being a pure expense?
Yeah, look, the market's very tight right now. That's not breaking news. People are, laying people off left and right. Originators, quite frankly, are asked to do more with less. And so what I tell them, all the clients out there, is that if you have a $1 billion portfolio or more, say 4,000 or 5,000 loans or more, then you're most likely, whether you were to pick PHH or somebody else, you're most likely spending about $500,000 to $1 million a year more than you have to in just servicing expenses. That's a pretty simple equation. So I ask clients two simple questions. Do you know what your all-in per loan per month cost is to service your loans? And number two, when was the last time you analyzed those servicing costs? And Robbie, the most common answers I get are pretty dissatisfying is number one, I don't really know what my real costs are, right? They just don't. They get the invoice and they don't really do much of reconciliation. And number two, we haven't really looked at the market in the last 5 or 10 years. I just had a client who had been with the same subservicer for 17 years. They said they were never happy with them. And they also had never assessed what else was out in the market for the last 17 years, right? So again, it's not to be self-servicing. You can choose PHH, you can choose many others that are out there, but you have to look first, what's the best culture fit for my team, my borrowers, and how I want to grow my business? And then second, you look at the actual dollars and cents side by side. So Robbie, we could do an entire podcast just on subservicing costs, but here's three or four things to think about, right? So servicing in-house, right? It's about $15 to $19 per loan per month per the MBA. You can look it up, right? Subservicing is about $10 to $12 per loan per month, no matter who you choose. So in general, a subservicer will cost you about 30 to 50% less than doing it yourself. But again, it has to be a right culture fit. Second, beyond just the fees, right? Can your subservicer reduce your servicing oversight team? So what does that mean? We had one client and they had 8 FTEs, 8 folks that were managing the prior subservicer. 6 months later, they had 3 FTEs managing us. And that's because we were able to reduce the number of complaints, defaults, all that kind of stuff. So they were able to take 5 extra people within the IMB and repurpose them throughout. That is a critical cost savings that you have to look at. Number three, can your subservicer help your team with recapture? This is the newest one. For subservicing, recapture is fundamental, right? Refis are just starting to come back a little bit, right? Are you doing anything with recapture with your subservicing provider? It's fundamental. But most of the top 10 out there can't really perform it. And then number four, again, it's a trend that I'm trying to talk ahead of where we're going, and that's default, right? Most people said, we got 1-3% default. It doesn't really cost me anything. And they just, take it as is. Sure, defaults aren't really high right now, but it doesn't matter. Default is death by 1,000 cuts. And most MSR holders, they don't see the actual losses each month. So for every loan you save from foreclosure, you can save $10, $20, $30,000 per loan. That's the real cost savings. So if you're looking at any subservicer, have them show you metrics on how well they perform, KPIs, awards for default management expertise to prove it. So like I said, it's not just about the fees. it's not just about lower cost, it's about total ROI in selecting the right partner, whether it's your subservicer or in-house employees. They have to be an extension of your organization to help you grow your business, not just be a vendor.
Well, as a follow-up to that, if someone was looking to move from in-house to subservicing or away from their existing provider, what do the economics look like to make the shift?
Yeah, so it's pretty straightforward, actually. Above and beyond the $10 to $12, right, there's two parts when you make a servicing transfer, right? The quick answer is boarding and deboarding, right? So if you're with an existing subservicer and you want to leave, right, there's an exit fee or a termination fee. And it's a deboarding fee of typically $25 per loan to leave. One of the biggest myths that goes along with that $25 fee is that, oh, I have to wait until the end of the contract to terminate. That is a myth. I've been trying to debunk that for years. Typically, you say, this isn't working. I want to leave. You give notice. It's typically 90 to 120 days, and you pay that deboarding fee of $25 a loan wherever you are in the contract, right? And in some cases, you don't even have to pay that $25 because some subservicers may help partially or even fully subsidize that deboarding cost to make it economically free to make that switch. So that's on the deboarding to leave your incumbent. The second part is a boarding fee. So, okay, great. You picked BHH or you picked somebody else. You want to go somewhere new. There's typically a boarding fee to make those transfers, send out the hello, goodbye letters, that kind of thing. It's typically $5 to $10 per loan. But again, sometimes you can get subservicers to waive this fee to make it economically easy to switch. Subservicers, you know, we're in it for the long haul, right? We want to prove we can help borrowers and customers over the long term. So the initial upfront fees, yes, there is a cost there, but typically that could be reduced or waived in some cases. So hopefully that makes sense.
It does. And we've spent most of this interview talking about the MSR holders, but I want to talk about the borrowers themselves. And I myself am a millennial. What a millennial consumer is looking for in their servicer. How different is what we're looking for from what a Gen X or baby boomer who has owned their home for decades looking for? How do you service them both with the same service levels?
Yeah, when I tell people what I do, I kind of have to explain servicing 101. And most people get kind of irritated because like, oh yeah, somebody transferred my loan and I didn't have a choice, right? And they're right, right? Originators, you know, who are picking subservicers, they have lots of choices. Borrowers or customers, they don't have any choices. When they're servicing transfers, they get a letter in the mail saying, hey, you now have to make your payment to a new subservicer. Some servicers handle it extremely well, right? Some don't. And some draw a lot of complaints, which frankly gives the servicing industry kind of a bad name. So you'll want to ask those subservicers, you know, how do they cater to all the borrowers, right? The lowest common denominator. So what do I mean by that? So I'll give you a couple extremes. So you might have an older borrower, right? They've made their payment via check or even walked it into the branch on time for the last 20 years, right? They want to get paper statements sent to them in the mail every month. And whenever they have a problem, they like to talk to somebody over the phone, right? That's one extreme. The other extreme might be you, Robbie, right? You might have a first-time home buyer, right? A millennial. They don't ever want to pick up the phone to talk to somebody like my three teenagers. They want ACH to draw their payment. They want e-statements instead of paper. They want a personalized video to teach them about why their payment just went up because escrow analysis just happened. They want to use a mobile app to check their balances. They never want to walk into a branch. And if they do have a question, this is the funny one, they would rather spend 20 minutes typing on a chat bot than to actually pick up the phone and call the customer service center, right? So those two models are very extreme. So all of those ways to interact with those very different customers is what is important. So when you're looking to select a subservicer, what are all the ways you can interact with my customers? And so, you know, we as an industry, we gotta keep our complaints for CFPB very low. We have to, you know, appease the agencies, Fannie, Freddie, Ginnies, to make sure we're compliant and to get awards from them. And here's the thing, this is the most important one. You wanna talk to clients who recently onboarded with that subservicer to see what their firsthand experience was with the Robbies of the world and the older borrowers who's made their payment on time for 20 years, right? Don't listen to the sales guys, no matter how good they may be. You want to sit down with the servicing operators in their shops and understand how they run their business, because that is who are going to be servicing your loans and talking to your customers. This, again, it's a little touchy-feely, but it's true. This is a long-term relationship with the subservicer. Beyond your own staff, your servicing portfolio is your number two asset. So you got to find the right fit.
How'd you know I don't make my payments on time?
Hey, you're a defaulted borrower. I love it.
No, not quite. If my servicer is listening out there, I make on time payments. I mean, I want to close by asking you, everyone's always looking to where we're headed as an industry. And so there aren't necessarily crystal balls out there in mortgage, but if you had one and wanted to give me or listeners a couple predictions on the servicing market over the next year and a half to 2 years, what would they be?
This is the fun one, right? So bottom line, especially what I'm seeing right now, and I said at the top, all this disruption, there's going to be more. There's going to be more disruption. There's going to be more consolidation. And so we talked a lot about making this switch into the subservicing 2.0 world. When you do that, right, my best advice is pick a partner that isn't just the right fit or the right cost, or maybe they're giving you a short-term deal, right, for the short term, right? You want to pick somebody for the long term. And I know that's sort of hard to measure, and that's why I'm giving kind of some specific things to ask, but you want somebody that can help grow your recapture, retain your borrowers, grow into other product types like HELOCs getting really hot, commercial, reverse, as you diversify over time. So, pick somebody that's the right fit. And then number two, I know I get real passionate about this stuff. I'm kind of a nerd about subservicing, but I am a true believer in the subservicing space as a whole. We are really getting better as an industry. We're reinvesting in technology and compliance and customer service. And I think if I had to give a prediction, I think very soon it's going to be a no-brainer for anybody who's got a $1 billion portfolio or more, 4,000 or 5,000 loans or more, that subservicing will be their de facto strategy. Within, I would guess, 3 to 5 years, I'd predict we'll go from 1 out of every 3 loans subserviced to 1 out of every 2, which means the majority will be subserviced. That's the trend it's going. I've looked at the numbers. When you have large banks and IMBs realizing that subservicing as an industry has really built the better mousetrap.
I can tell you're passionate about servicing and subservicing. I can hear it in your voice. So I very much appreciate you making the time for me today. I think there were a lot of valuable insights here for listeners.
Yeah, I really appreciate the time, Robbie. Keep up the fantastic work on the podcast. Our industry is, we're genuinely grateful for all the work that you're doing. So thanks so much.
Another big release yesterday were the minutes from the March 19th and 20th, the Federal Open Market Committee meeting, which some would consider old news. Fed minutes showed consensus amongst participants about rate cuts at some point this year. However, at the time of the meeting, there was increased confidence that inflation was moving toward the Fed's 2% target. The more interesting portion of the minutes was around the Fed's balance sheet. No decisions about adjusting the pace of balance sheet runoff were made at the meeting, but there was agreement in reducing the monthly runoff by half from its current pace in treasuries, as MBS runoff is expected to remain well below the monthly cap of $35 billion for the foreseeable future. Any adjustments to the Fed balance sheet runoff are at least a few meetings away, read June, July, slightly later than previously expected. Today's economic calendar is already underway with the latest monetary policy decision from the European Central Bank, which held rates steady while readying markets for a 25 basis points cut in June. The U.S. calendar began with March PPI up 0.2% and weekly jobless claims at 211,000. PPI was expected to increase 0.4% month over month and 2.3% year over year versus 0.6% and 1.6% previously. Later today brings several Treasury auctions that will be headlined by 5-year tips and reopen 20-year and 30-year bonds, Freddie Mac's primary mortgage market survey, and remarks from several Fed speakers. We begin the day with agency MBS prices about unchanged from the sell-off Wednesday, and the 10-year yielding 4.55 after closing yesterday at 4.56%. Not much could change the course set by yesterday's CPI. Let's wrap up with a joke and some housekeeping. Did you know that the main function of your little toe is to make sure all the furniture in the house is in the right place? Speaking of things around the house, the other day I yelled into a colander and I strained my voice. Thank you again to today's podcast sponsor, PHH Mortgage. Their unwavering dedication to customer service and best-in-class operating performance has made them one of the most highly decorated servicers in the U.S. over the past 3 years, with awards from Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, as well as a HUD Tier 1 rated servicer. Reach out to them today to learn how their innovative servicing and lending solutions can benefit you. If you have any questions about the podcast or sponsoring opportunities, send me an email at robbie@robchrisman.com. Visit robchrisman.com for more information on our industry partners, access to archived commentaries, and how to subscribe to the daily mortgage news and commentary. To listen to or download past episodes of this podcast, search Mortgage News on any platform you get your podcast from.